Building the Movie List, where we go through IMDb's top 250 movies, try and come up with a list of the greatest movies of all time. This week, we're doing a little movie called Pulp Fiction. And as always, I'm joined by my trusty co-host, baddest motherfucker I know, Matthew Molina.
What's up, daddy-o?
And Carter McGowan.
Hey, how's it going?
And Mark Boone.
Well, honored to be here. Thank you very much. This is my second time around. Another great LA movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You
second LA movie.
I have you down for every LA movie.
Do you have them down for Escape from LA?
That's not on this list.
Surprisingly.
Somehow. Escape from New York is not on this list.
That's a glaring omission.
Upsetting. That is upsetting. But this week we're talking about Pulp Fiction, Quentin Tarantino's. This is the movie where he really nailed it. He burst on the scene with Reservoir Dogs, and then his follow-up to that really knocked it out of the park and made everybody fully aware that he is a high-end director, really. I've seen this movie a ton. How about you guys?
Like I was mentioning a little bit earlier, I've seen it many times. I will watch it several more times. The dialogue is amazing, the way it flows. Just the whole beginning scene talking about the foot massage is just very entertaining all the way through. Yeah, it's just an amazing movie the way it's written.
Yeah, I've probably seen this at least 50 times. Like, probably not all at once, but in clips and bits and pieces. I mean, this is one of those Cinemax movies where if it's on, you'll sit down and watch 20 minutes and probably end up watching the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
I could not count how many times. This is probably in my, as far as movies that I've watched over and over again, this is probably in the top five.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen that movie as many times as you guys, but definitely watching it this time, it stood out how iconic so many of the scenes are. And
a lot of memes.
A lot of memes.
Heavily memed.
So much of the dialogue is so memorable, and literally every word out of Samuel L. Jackson is a quote, basically. And yeah, like, you can almost say, like, any line of dialogue from the movie, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's from Pulp Fiction.
Definitely a lot of memorable lines. You're talking about the writing. You know, I'm big on dialogue, and instead of so much of a, not to bang on movies like Transformers, but it's easier to blow things up, and it's very entertaining and colorful. It's harder to work it out with the dialogue, and, you know, like you mentioned, it's an amazing dialogue or conversation throughout the whole entire movie. And from what I understand, just watching a little bit of the backstory of the movie, that at the time Quentin Tarantino was working at like a movie store, like a Blockbuster kind of thing, and he was just a total movie nerd, had written some scripts, and was literally living in somebody's house, you know, different houses, different couches, had no car, sold that first script, True Romance, for like, I mean, 50 cents or something crazy. And just, you know, things born out of necessity, you know, consequences dictate your course of action. I feel like that movie, he was so hungry, and it was just such a raw movie, and therefore it's timeless. And, you know, I was kind of up in the air about when it was made. I, you know, can remember where I was when I first saw it, but I forgot what year it was. Just a timeless movie.
Yeah, True Romance has another one of the greatest Christopher Walken monologues in a movie ever. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah, with the Dennis Hopper.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Breaks a lot of rules. All his movies break a lot of rules. Yeah. And I like how everyone takes it tongue in cheek. You know, you got to have a sense of humor, and you can see a movie made that way today may not fly because everything has to be a little more politically correct. And yeah, it's really entertaining to watch people smoke in restaurants. And God, everyone smoked in that movie. Yeah. Everyone referred to everyone else, even if they weren't black, as the N-word. So.
Yeah, a lot of N-word.
A lot of N-words and a lot of F-bombs. I saw the fact for this movie that it uses the word fuck 265 times, and I thought, like, that can't be right. And then I watched the movie, and it's just...
Sounds about right.
Like, every other word is the F-bomb.
So do we know what Scarface had? I know that's got to be up there as well.
Oh, I don't know. A
few F-bombs in that.
Yeah.
I want to say that passed, like, 300.
I still love the edited version of Scarface on TV. Oh, God. There's just so many good, like, tweaks that make no sense, but they're hilarious.
The best one is the scar. It's like, where'd you get that scar? Eating pineapple?
How would I get a scar like this eating pineapple? Yeah.
Can you guys think of any other movies? You know, I don't... I'm pretty much a movie buff, but you know, if the movie was made after like 1975, I wasn't really old enough to be watching a lot of movies, wasn't allowed to be watching any movie like Pulp Fiction at that time, you know, when I was that age. But it seemed like Pulp Fiction kind of like spawned a new direction of movies. You guys think of any other movies that kind of remind you of it?
I know a ton of copycats came out. I just can't pinpoint like one exactly.
Well, I mean, like Sin City's one.
Yeah.
Like, but that's, it's hard to call that a copycat, but it definitely probably wouldn't exist the way it does without Pulp Fiction.
I mean, Quentin Tarantino directed one of the segments
In Sin City. It's like, him and Robert Rodriguez are buddy-buddy, so it's hard to call that one a full-on copycat. But that's the first thing that comes to mind.
Desperado came out, like, the next year or, like, the same year.
Yeah, they both came to Miramax around the same time.
I enjoyed how they strung those stories together, and there was always a common thread. Marcellus Wallace has to be one of them throughout all the stories. But like Crash came along, that was a pretty similar movie. How they're tying together stories, or Babel as well, kind of piggybacking off of that. So I guess if plagiarism's the finest form of flattery, there's a fair amount of it. So yeah, it spawned a lot of other movies that I really enjoyed. Yeah. Besides Pulp Fiction,
I'd say you probably wouldn't have anything like Traffic or what's the one with Denzel Washington, Training Day, without Pulp Fiction.
Right, absolutely. That's right. Rafael Perez, the Rampart Division guy, cost LA a little bit of tax dollars to process that lawsuit, or all those lawsuits. Yeah, that's definitely had some Pulp Fiction-ish to it.
I know there were a lot of student films that came out of that. Ill-fitting suits and sunglasses and a very poor attempt at Quentin Tarantino-esque dialogue that I've seen.
I really enjoy Samuel L. Jackson in all of Quentin Tarantino's movie. I know this podcast is more about Pulp Fiction, but can't stop, he can't help but connect the Quentin Tarantino theme to it. And Samuel L. Jackson.
Shared universe.
Yeah, he's just amazing. Jackie Brown, he was great in that. What was the other movie that he was in?
He's in Hateful Eight.
That's right.
He's in Django.
Django, exactly.
Hateful Eight is still probably one of the best theater experiences I've ever had, hands down, for a movie.
It's delightful.
It was awesome. We saw the 70mm. Yeah. I think Evan and Matt were there, and we saw the 70mm presentation, and we all got a little intoxicated beforehand, so it was just like the perfect encompassing, you know, Quentin Tarantino experience.
Nice. I've never seen that.
That movie, it has an intermission, and I always remember when, as soon as the intermission started, there was a guy behind me that was just like, well, it's just a bunch of talking, isn't it?
It's like, yeah, that's why it's so great.
Have you seen a Tarantino movie?
Have you seen a Tarantino? Yeah, did you see Inglourious Basterds? That first whole...
Oh, I'm still
that
salty.
That first scene is just talking, basically.
Inglourious Basterds didn't win for best writing. It lost to The Hurt Locker, which, if you go back, The Hurt Locker does not have the greatest writing.
The dialogue's not anything extravagant. For sure. Inglourious Basterds with the gentleman that speaks four languages. I forgot his name. That's amazing. I heard Samuel L. Jackson was vying for the part of Tim Roth's, the part that Tim Roth got in Reservoir Dogs. So he would have been in one more Tarantino movie, but Tim Roth got the part. And I guess they met up later and asked him if he wanted to audition for something in Pulp Fiction. I heard everyone was vying for the part of Mia. I heard there was tons of actresses in L.A. at the time who were very much vying for that part.
But yeah, Tarantino desperately wanted Uma Thurman to do it, and she originally turned it down, but then he read her the script over the phone and finally convinced her to do the role.
He really just wanted to get a look at them toes. The foot fetish thing just really was always in the forefront of my mind this watch, especially with the whole foot conversation. I don't know why I didn't connect those two before.
Well, yeah, I noticed a scene where she lifts up her foot and it's like dirty underneath.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I just hadn't seen it in like full HD. But I was
he noticed something about this movie that I didn't, and I was kind of zoning in on something on Heat that you guys didn't really have a clue on. That big old like elephant man thing hanging Val Kilmer's elbow. That was bizarre. It's
I noticed that, and
you noticed that, Carter, the elbow thing.
I heard you talking about that, and I was like, oh, I gotta go back and watch
that. Check that out.
But yeah, I noticed her foot was like dirty when she picked it up, and then when they're washing the blood off their hands, one of the towels falls off the towel rack, and I had just never noticed that before, and I'm like, that's just a weird...
Right. I'd heard that everyone liked that script so much that not only were people vying for the part of Mia, that it was like a pretty big family experience. I heard that's kind of what the Quentin Tarantino movie, when they're making a movie, that everyone's gets to be pretty tight-knit family, and everyone really loves, you know, to kind of forward the movie progress. Unlike other, like maybe James Cameron movies, where people are ready just about to slit their throat by the end of it or midway through.
Yeah, this is a star-studded cast. Samuel Jackson, John Travolta kind of has his second wind in his career with this movie. Uma Thurman, Bruce Willis, Tim Roth is in it.
Phil LaMarr.
Yeah. Acclaimed voice actor Phil LaMarr.
Who plays the Gimp?
I'm very curious about that, too.
Yeah, I was going to look that up, actually, and I didn't.
And then who played Bruce Willis's younger, like who played the younger version of Butch? Mm. Who's that kid? He'd be about 30 years old by now or so.
I don't know. Yeah, Christopher Walken shows up for a second in this movie.
The real questions. Oh, that Christopher Walken monologue is probably one of my favorite parts of the whole movie.
That like should have won an Oscar.
Oh yeah, did he get nominated as like best supporting actor for that? Or
I don't think so. He should have like that was like up there with.
I feel like he had. Baldwin. I feel like he got nominated for like a similar thing where he just showed up, maybe for a like Catch Me If You Can or something.
Because I know he got nominated for something like that.
Or maybe True Romance.
It was like a bit part, and you're like, really? He's getting the best supporting actor. He was in it for like 5 minutes.
I think Samuel Jackson is the... He kind of steals this movie. Just every time he's on screen, every word out of his mouth is just so iconic. Did you guys have a favorite line from Jules?
Shit, Negro, that's all you had to say.
Oh,
that's my favorite.
The wolf or whatever. Yeah.
I like when he's Superfly TNT.
Oh, what would be my favorite line from Samuel L. Jackson? There was quite a few. I definitely liked his reaction to when John Travolta or Vincent Vega, when they're going back and forth about, you know, whether or not Antoine should have got chucked out of that window into that glass house. And he says, you know, foot massage is a lot different than putting your tongue in the holiest of holies. You know, it's not even in the same ballpark. And John Travolta says, well, I'm kind of tired right now. Maybe give me a foot massage. He's like, yeah. Fuck you. Yeah. Fuck you.
So would you give a guy?
Fuck you.
But I thoroughly enjoyed how, you know, if it's the first time you're watching the movie, you just follow him in as if you're one of those people into that apartment complex. I'm not even sure why they're going in there. And then they check their watches and they're a little early and they go, you know, a couple suites down just to finish that argument about the foot massage. And then, you know, go into like an amazing scene. That was just good
leading.
I love
the mundane nature of their like lives. It's these bombastic, you know, criminal activities, and they're just like having a conversation and talking about the burger joint and, you know. Yeah,
talking about Royale with cheese and foot massages. And
$5 milkshake. Is that a $5 milkshake?
Don't put no bourbon in it or nothing.
That's a pretty fucking good milkshake.
Yes, that was one of my favorite lines from the movie.
I don't know
his
if it's
reaction,
worth $5. But.
I believed him after he took a sip of Uma's milkshake and he's got a little on his chin or whatever. And he's like, that's a fucking good milkshake. For a second there, I was like, he is on heroin and he did enjoy that milkshake. That was like really convincing.
The portrayal of people who are high in this movie is so accurate.
Absolutely.
It is just great. And then the portrayal of the drug dealer is one of the best portrayals of a drug dealer I've seen in any movie. It's the
Eric
most
Stoltz.
Honest. Yeah.
prank caller.
And you see that brick in his hand, that cell phone. I remember in 1994 when those things were first coming out. That's one of the reasons why I like watching that movie is it's pre-cell phone. You know, you're able to smoke in public places. It was just an entirely different time than it is now. Just probably didn't even have to wear seat. Did you have to wear seatbelts in 94? I don't know. Were you guys alive in 94? I
think
you
guys,
somewhere. You guys probably strapped in, huh? Little buggy seat.
Strapped in, smoking. It was all good.
Yeah, man. I was strapped, man. I was packing.
I was definitely strapped in 94.
I wrote this song in 94.
Well, it's funny because I remember going to L.A. as a kid in the 90s. And when I watch Pulp Fiction, I remember all that stuff. Like how it used to be. You don't really see that there's more like gentrification going on. You didn't have these like dirty, old, kind of like leftover 60s burnt out kind of structures there. They just don't exist like that anymore.
Yep, probably a lot of those spots aren't there. I think a lot of people go to that diner in Torrance. I think that's where they shot the Amanda Plummer, that scene there in the beginning and the end. So it's some fairly I guess, popular, iconic spot.
Is that that diner where, like, basically every diner scene is shot there?
It could be. I think it's in Torrance or something like that, near the LAX.
But yeah, we talked about a lot about the dialogue in the movie and how great that is. It's kind of a staple for Quentin Tarantino movies. But also just, like, visually, there's a lot of things that really stick with you, whether it's, like, John Travolta wearing a UC Santa Barbara banana slug shirt. Or just the dance scene with Mia.
There you go.
And the music is also really good and really integrated well into the movie.
Soundtrack is amazing.
Yeah.
And I had the CD soundtrack, and it had little clips of the movies before each track. So all of that stuff, like, anytime I hear that song, I hear, like, the preceding, you know, clip or whatever that is before that. It doesn't matter, like, when it's on.
I was thinking this time, I don't think in earnest I've ever listened to that one song, like, "Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon." I think
Statutory Rape Rock.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. I think the only time I have ever heard that has been through this movie.
Yeah. Wow. It's like, you got that, you got, like, "Young Girl." She was just 17, if you know what I mean.
Definitely something.
There's a whole album you could put together of statutory rape rock of just, like, you know, songs about women who aren't of age yet.
Well, that one restaurant scene, I know it's not Ed DeVevick's, I forgot the name of the restaurant where everyone's in
Jack
character.
Rabbit Jack,
there you go. Yeah. That was interesting because I was watching the movie with my daughter earlier. And, you know, she loves the movie, but she has no idea really who Ed Sullivan is or Buddy Holly or Mimi Van Doren or, you know, it's iconic to see Marilyn Monroe. That kind of brought it home. But it's amazing that, you know, several more years, people watching that movie, you know, in a generation or so, it's going to be like,
see, that wasn't Marilyn Monroe. That's Marilyn Monroe.
There's two Marilyn Monroes in here. I think James Mansfield has a night off tonight.
Yeah, I think it's only going to take, like, one more generation, and then we'll still have Marilyn Monroe, but everybody else. Maybe Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly, I think, is still...
Probably just because of Weezer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Like, Weezer's keeping Buddy Holly.
I didn't even put that together.
Not Gary Busey?
No. The amount of location shooting in this movie is impressive, too. They just don't do that anymore. You don't see, like, Bruce Willis walking on the side of an old dirty apartment with weeds growing up in the middle of anywhere, you know?
I like the grittiness of it. Definitely.
Yeah, I feel like this reminded me of Heat a lot, where it seemed like most of the areas didn't seem to be sets. It seemed to be,
There's like one green screen shot in Heat when they're on the balcony.
Oh, when Robert De Niro's with,
But that's the only one in that entire movie.
It's like the city in the background. Yeah, you can definitely tell that's superimposed kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what got me. That's what took me out of the movie.
Yeah.
Clearly.
He's like drinking a glass of water, and the glass of water's green.
Oh, man. So after this movie, Tarantino goes on and makes a bunch of other really successful and highly touted movies.
Death Proof.
Number one.
I think that's the one thing I haven't seen.
You gotta see it. It's all filmed in San Ynez, running around those roads out there chasing after each other.
I really like Death Proof.
I watch it just for that reason alone. I'm like, I used to ride on that road. There, over there, where that is.
So there's a interview between him and Robert Rodriguez. He did this show called The Director's Chair, and he was talking about Death Proof, and he's like, yeah, I really wanted to get into the grindhouse thing, and I was hoping it would start this revival. But after that flopped, he's like, I went in kind of a different direction and did Inglourious Bastard. And he's like, talking to Robert Rodriguez, he's like, and you just doubled down on that and went hard.
You mean with, like, Sin City?
Sin City and, like, what was after?
He did Machete.
Oh, yeah, Machete.
Machete 2.
Spy Kids.
He did one of the Predators, too, didn't he?
I thought it was
maybe the best one.
It was called Predators. Yeah, it was really good.
He did that?
Yeah,
that was good.
That fight.
Oh, no, wait, he didn't.
He produced that, right?
He produced it.
I was going to say.
It was a lot better than The Predator.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, the new one?
Yeah, that was disappointing.
Oh, my gosh, trash.
Which sucks, because Shane Black is great.
I know.
You would think.
Well, that's like that had a lot to do with, like, studio interference.
That makes sense.
Half the movie reshot, which doesn't ever happen for Quentin Tarantino. He never gets any studio interference.
It seems like he kind of has just free reign to do whatever. I think it's because he do everything, like, really cheaply and really fast.
Well, his first couple were super cheap, and then I think after that he was kind of like, now I can, you know, call my
do
own
whatever.
Shots.
Yeah.
I heard kind of what you were saying, that he keeps within budget and the time restraints. He's, like, really on the money. They're almost saying he was too responsible.
This and Reservoir Dogs, like, I'm pretty sure those didn't
Reservoir
cost
Dogs
anything.
Cost right. almost nothing yeah. to make.
And I would imagine all those production companies and studios love that. They'd yeah. love they'd love a Blair Witch project every year.
You know, spend 30
grand. That's why, and, yeah, that's why Blumhouse is so successful, because right, they yeah. give all those directors like every, next to nothing.
Everything costs like $10 yeah. and it makes like $20 million. It's like, all right, that's good.
Yeah, we'll do another Purge for sure.
Yeah, sure. But yeah, where does this rank for you guys as far as like Tarantino movies? Is this your favorite, or do you have another one that you go to?
This is probably my favorite.
See, I think Hateful Eight's probably my favorite.
Really? Okay.
But I think that this is his best movie.
Okay.
So it's kind of tough. I've definitely watched this more than Hateful
Eight. What connects with you more on Hateful Eight?
Oh, I just love westerns.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a tough that's one. Fair. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, I love the L.A. crime movies. Or just yeah, a movie so shot in L.A. Right, so True Romance, love that movie. Jackie Brown, love that movie.
Man, I wish Jackie Pulp Brown Fiction, was on this list.
All of them. They're amazing.
This is probably the one I've seen the most. I don't know if it's my favorite. It's definitely tied with Kill Bill Part 1 for me. Because that was like everything that I was into in a movie, you know, just kind of like with the Quentin Tarantino, think, like, yeah. juge on top of it.
I feel like Kill Bill is like the most like my movie, like made for me. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, again, nothing will ever beat The Hateful Eight as yeah. a theater-going wow. experience.
I'm missing out.
I think my favorite might actually be Jackie Brown. I like Jackie Brown a lot.
Pretty good.
When you absolutely
have to kill every motherfucker in the room except no substitutes. That's a top-notch movie.
I feel like that probably had a little spike in AK-47 sales after that, right?
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah. I want an AK.
Well, it's like the John Woo effect for 9mm. After Hard Boiled came out, they had like a huge spike in 9mm sales.
Where does Tarantino rank for you guys as far as like directors? Is this one of your favorite directors? Or
I mean, he's probably in the top five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's almost exactly what I was going to say. It's like I wouldn't put him at number one, but totally top five.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he hasn't had a miss, really.
No.
Some would say Death Proof, but I mean, I wouldn't.
I think he did like one movie before Reservoir Dogs, but...
But no one's seen it.
But no one's seen it, so... Death Proof, yeah, I haven't seen Death Proof, so maybe that might be a little bit, but...
See, I have to rewatch that, because I didn't like it, because my expectations were...
Did you see it in theaters the first time?
No,
okay,
I
the whole Grindhouse experience when it was in the theater was pretty great, because you got you like the interstitial...
Like a drive-in movie, right? Yeah, all the 70s stuff.
They even had like an ad for a fake Mexican restaurant, like you know. So it was just that whole
part of
like,
the entertainment. Yeah,
quality.
It was just for some reason I was expecting like it to be like this hardcore action racing movie, and it just was not that. And so my expectations were like set for that. And when it wasn't that, I was just like, oh, this sucks. But I know I got to go watch it again.
The diner scene in that movie is pretty great, because it's a oneer and it just kind of like keeps following all of them, much like Reservoir Dogs. But,
I saw that was before I knew what a oneer was.
Yeah.
I like the low techness of some of his movies, you know, with everything striving to be so crystal clear and everything. I like the little cigarette burn marks on, you know, the movie Death Proof and as the scene switch, that kind of things.
Yeah, I think he's one of my favorite directors. I'd like to see how his career ends up when it's all said and done. But
I want
to
see a Star Trek.
Oh man,
is he doing
that
a Star
would be
Trek?
Amazing.
Yeah, he keeps on talking about
it. He wants
it.
To do it.
It's like he wants to do it. It's like somehow been sort of in the works, but they can't quite figure it out because he wants to make it R-rated.
R-rated.
You know, I feel like they just got to let him do
just
something
do
like that. You know, look at Deadpool. Like nobody wanted to give that the time of day, and it was like the most successful thing out there.
And Star Trek is all about like dialogue and all the stuff that Tarantino excels at.
I'm trying to think who does movies similar to him or who has a similar style, and I can't really think of anyone. So I'm going to go ahead and say for what he does, he's my favorite director. He just comes out with some unique movies. And it's just kind of funny. Physically, kind of reminds me of Roger Federer, so I might even regard him as the Roger Federer of movie directors. Yeah, he's
like Falcons.
Comes up with some amazing stuff.
Yeah, I feel like directors do certain aspects of what he does similarly, but he doesn't do just like one thing really well. He does the dialogue really well, and he has the style with all of his movies, and the music's always good, and he's able to make these iconic scenes in his movies. Like Richard Rodriguez, like he kind of has a similar energy in some of his movies, but Like, I don't think he has, like, the dialogue or anything like that.
I don't know if you guys saw Bad Times at the El Royale, but that really, really wanted to be a Tarantino movie and didn't quite.
No.
I mean, it was good and I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't the same.
Definitely. Definitely felt like a Mr. Pibb when you wanted a Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. I mean, I go the other way, but.
Yeah. Teach their own.
Yeah, all the stuff in those movies, it's for me, because I'm a little bit older, it's like nostalgia. So when they go in there and they, what was that, you called it statutory rape rock? Yeah. My God, that's just terrible. Anyways, the reel-to-reel on there, that was really cool, the analog reel-to-reel. And there's just so many things that are, you know, there's no mistake. That was there deliberately. And he, the way he kind of marries or sews together so many aspects of pop culture. And because I grew up during that era, I can tell, obviously, we probably watched a lot of the similar kind of movies, you know, cartoons, etc. I can connect with what the guy is trying to say.
He's really good at weaving in pop culture into pretty much everything that he does without it being obnoxious. Like, there are so many movies now that they'll put in, like, the Troll Doll. Because remember Troll Doll?
Ready Player One.
Yeah, Ready Player One, where it's just remember this?
Yeah, I thought Ready Player One did it really well.
Yeah, seamlessly.
Yeah.
Super effective way he does that. I agree. I mean, when I saw the Pulp Fiction movie, and saw that scene where the spider caught another couple of flies. I was a little nervous next time I went to a pawn shop. So I was like, whoa, all right. Gotta make sure I can get out of there, check all the exits.
I used to consider pawn shops reputable establishments. I wish I could forget about this movie, like get my mind wiped and then watch it again just so I could experience it going off the rails when it gets to the pawn shop part.
Right.
Because I don't even remember the first time that I watched it. I always expect, like, oh, this is the pawn shop scene. This is where it goes nuts. But I can't imagine watching it and not knowing that that's going to happen. I don't even know how I would process that.
That's a good point. I don't remember the, like, exact first time I watched it. I think my dad was just like, you got to come watch this movie. It's on TV right now. Like,
I feel like I always tuned in, like, halfway through the movie or something. Yeah, it was always be on TV and just tune in. And then
it's not a lot.
You couldn't really tell where you were. In the movie is, like, kind of structured in a way where you can just kind of tune in for a scene and then watch the rest of it.
It pulls you in,
yeah.
No matter where you start on it.
Yeah,
every scene kind of stands on its own.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys talked about Heat a while ago, and that's kind of how I feel about Heat. Like, this and Heat were those movies where, like, if it's on TV, it's just going to suck you in. You're like, all right, are they going to rob the bank right now? Like, I'll sit and watch for 20 minutes. Or like
how Evan, you said, this movie Heat again. Didn't we already do a podcast on this?
Salt in the
That's
wound.
Only like 10 minutes of that 3-hour movie. It's like,
oh, but it's so good. They used that clip of Val Kilmer to teach Special Forces guys how
to do. I respect that, but.
So
how is it that both of these movies have two actors in it with the same kind of funky ponytail hairstyle, Val Kilmer and John
Greasy ponytail.
Travolta? Yeah.
Well, no, he only puts it up in the ponytail when he's getting all fancy for the day.
Yeah.
Well, once upon a time when I had hair, that was exactly the ponytail I had. When I look at pictures, I'm like, oh, that's just horrible.
I feel like that was a go-to look for a lot of dudes in that time period.
When my daughter looks at pictures, she's like, no, that's not you.
I'm down with it. Did you rock a bolo tie?
No bolo tie.
But yeah, Vincent Vega, Matt mentioned this earlier, shared universe, brother of Vic Vega.
Supposedly, from Reservoir Dogs. Is that 100% or?
I thought Quentin Tarantino confirmed that. It says here that Tarantino had a spinoff film in development.
Oh, with both of them?
For a prequel with both of them.
Yeah, I feel like I've been sold a lot of Quentin Tarantino projects like that that have never, like, seen the light of day, where he's like, I'm going to do a Kill Bill prequel anime, and I'm going to do this. And
well, yeah, I think he scrapped it because they were both too old at that point, and it doesn't, it wouldn't work.
It would have just been sad.
Just use that de-aging technology.
Now it's coming back around.
Like Sam Jackson and Captain Marvel, which was bizarre.
He is the man in every movie now. He's the new Michael Caine. Michael Caine used to be in every movie. Now it's like Samuel L. Jackson.
Is this the iconic role for Samuel L. Jackson, though?
I would say so. Yeah.
I can't think of anything that's more iconic.
Oh, he was badass in Jackie Brown. There's no doubt about that.
He's great in that.
Black Snake Moan.
I don't know. He's Mace Windu.
Just that eye.
Lakeview Terrace, he was impressive. He made
Lakeview
that movie.
Lakeview Terrace is a great
movie. I thoroughly enjoyed looking at him as a racist. He's very convincing.
There's so many facts with this movie. So the wallet that he has, bad motherfucker, that belonged to Quentin Tarantino. And the inscription is in reference to the theme song Shaft, in Shaft, who was played by Samuel L. Jackson.
There you go. More little pop culture woven in there. Great stuff.
They just released a sequel to Shaft with Sam Jackson and Richard Roundtree.
Heard that's not good.
That's not good.
Hopefully it's better than that remake of Superfly.
That was bad.
Horrible. Man, what was the last Quentin Tarantino movie, Django, or was it The Hateful Eight?
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight. Mm-hmm. That's his most recent one.
But yeah, he's coming out with
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. Marilyn. The next couple months. Charlie Manson? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Some heavy hitters came out in 1994. Number one on the list, Shawshank Redemption, Forrest Gump, Leon the Professional, Lion King, and everybody's favorite, Three Colors Red.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pretty much classic.
Round out like the top 10 on the top 200. Shawshank.
Shawshank.
Pulp Fiction.
Shawshank. I don't know. Jeez. Yeah, Shawshank and Pulp Fiction are like way up there. I think they're in the top 10.
Shawshank's funny because that didn't hit like Pulp Fiction did immediately. No, that was all in the TNT.
That was the TBS ultimate like TV movie. It got such a resurgence through people seeing it on TNT. Yeah,
it's not gonna have the impact of Pulp Fiction. Just hit you right away.
I mean, as the soundtrack, man. Like that's probably that
opening credit scene just like smacks you in the face, and you're like, "Wow, I'm in for it now." Like,
absolutely, I'm gonna hold my pee. I'm not going to the bathroom. I'm just gonna hold it.
I think that kind of like paved the way for Guardians of the Galaxy for sure, the use of the soundtrack.
Well, it's funny because one of the songs on the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack is on the Reservoir Dogs soundtrack. Right? Yeah,
I can see that because a lot of the movie is diegetic. How do you say it?
Diegetic.
So it's like it's actually in the universe and happening. Same with like Guardians for the most part, and like Baby Driver. But yeah, do you guys have speaking of that opening scene that's so great, do you guys have a favorite scene in this movie? I feel like all of them are pretty awesome.
Yeah, pretty much there's not a weak scene in the whole movie.
I think the scene where Jules is interrogating the guy and eating his Big Kahuna burger and everything.
Anything with Harvey Keitel in it is
Harvey
pretty
Keitel
great.
Is pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a strong movie. That's hard to pick one out. That's like there's hardly any weak link in the entire movie in the chain.
Where they shove the adrenaline needle into her. That's really great. Solid.
That one's great. And I noticed watching this time, when it's over, everyone's different reaction to the thing. It's
Patricia
like,
Arquette.
Yeah, she's like, whoa, trippy. And then the girl on the couch is like, oh my God, that actually just happened. And then John Travolta like flops over on the floor because he's just like exhausted. And then Eric Stoltz is like, oh man, what's going on in the house? It's just like the gamut of emotion.
Yeah, it's hard to recall other movies by other directors that kind of deliver it with that kind of intensity over and over consistently. The movie surprises me. You know, everyone wants to know what's in that box. I'm sure there's lots of conjecture about it. Mm. It's just funny how they lined up the three numbers and you knew what it was going to be. 6, 6. Yeah. And then right before it's going to be 6, they just leave something, you know, to your imagination. Is it going to be? It probably is, but you don't know.
9.
9.
6, 6, 9.
So apparently there was a rumor going around, at least when the DVD of the movie came out, they're like, yeah, behind the Band-Aid on Marcellus's neck is 666 is tattooed on there. Because he's the devil. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's supposed to represent. And that was one of those like playground rumors, you know, that you always heard.
Yeah, the two main things that I always heard were either Marcellus Wallace's soul is in there or the diamonds from Reservoir Dogs. Those are the main ones.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I always wondered, it doesn't ever say what the Band-Aid is from, huh? Because it shows it very prominently in a few shots, the bandage on the back.
So I think that ties into the soul thing, like, you know.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah. I don't know what, some mythology somewhere has something to do with, like, if you lose your soul, it's through the back of your neck or something.
Interesting.
I thought it was maybe also, like, just, like, something with the ball gag rubbed on the back of his neck. I don't know.
But that happened after?
No, he had that from the very beginning scene when they're in the bar and he's telling him, you know, about telling him to take a dive in the fifth. Yeah. Oh, pride's a bitch and ability doesn't last. And if you think you're aging like wine, no. If it's like vinegar, yeah.
This is pretty good Bruce Willis territory as well, like before he kind of hit that slump. Of
I feel like this was kind of his last great role. Zed's dead, baby.
What, Sixth Sense?
He's been new...
Death Wish.
Death Wish. That was so good.
God, did not see
that's
that.
That's one of the worst movies I've seen.
If you want to see just somebody collect a paycheck, that's right. That movie.
That was the that was, might have been the most phoned in.
Oh, hello, my wife that I love.
Yes, I love you. You?
I thought for like Ving Rhames' part, he played it very well. It was obviously a pretty Spartan amount of lines in the movie, but I thought he was really impressive. And most of the other actors, I was already well aware of who they were. I was surprised that he didn't go on to do things bigger than
Mission Impossible, man.
Right.
But it's funny because he's like a big teddy bear in Mission Impossible. Oh, yeah. You see him in this and you're like, oh man, I forgot he had some juice.
I thought that he would go on to do something better. That'd be like a great launch pad, Pulp Fiction. I mean, all the other actors in it were pretty well known. And I was like, who is this guy? I was pretty impressed. And then, like, say, Mission Impossible isn't horrible, but I think he, you know, he's heading for almost like that B actor boxing kind of thing.
I was talking earlier about how this and Reservoir Dogs were like really cheap to make. How much do you guys think this movie cost to make?
I'm going to say $1.5 million.
I'm going with
all right, I'm going to throw 20. In a fact here. $5 million went to the actors.
$6
million. I think 20 or 30.
There was $8
million. $8
million.
Wow. So, yeah, and it went on to gross over $200 million at the box office.
That's a decent percentage.
That's pretty good.
And I can't even imagine what the residuals are on DVD and TV sales. Oh,
yeah, who knows?
Yeah, and the camera shots are steady, unlike Blair Witch Project.
Yeah. There's a couple of little handheld ones. Just a few.
I like it how they leave. I mean, there's some brutal parts in it, but they leave a lot to the imagination. And I definitely appreciate that. It's a raw movie, but there's just all those little things in there that kind of keep you guessing, keep you more interested in the movie.
I really like most of in the pawn shop after Marcellus shoots Zed. He's pretty much, Zed's not on screen, but you just hear him like wailing in the background. He's like, oh God.
You don't shoot a guy in the dick.
Then take his motorcycle like that.
It's a chopper.
A chopper, sorry.
It's a chopper. Right.
Well, I love all the like natural lighting in the movie. Everything feels like you're in the world. You're not like, okay, there's a light over there, you know, lighting these guys up. It's like they walk through a hallway and you hit like all the windows and, you know.
I noticed a couple this time.
Yeah.
Just because like I'm really looking into lighting right now, but it still was like I had to like really look. It's super low key, like really well done.
Which you can tell a really cheap movie just by the lighting.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first thing to go.
It's like blast the light at the actor. It's like, ah.
The Tyler Perry effect.
Yeah.
Put one giant light in the corner of the room and go for it.
Is that how he became the richest man in Hollywood?
Pretty much.
Yeah. He only spent money on one light.
Well, you guys have anything else you want to say about Pulp Fiction?
I'm sure as soon as this podcast ends, I'll have all kinds of stuff to say.
Yeah, I really like this movie. I think I liked it more watching it again this time. Like I said, like I don't think I ever thought of it as my favorite. And I'm not sure how many times I've actually like just sat down and watched it from beginning to end. And this time it really stood out to me, like how iconic so many of the scenes are and how memorable so much of the dialogue is and everything.
I think almost as soon as like anytime I run into somebody who's like, oh, I haven't seen Pulp Fiction, like immediately it's like, okay, we're watching. Like that's happening right away.
Stop what you're doing.
It's kind of strange, again, a brutal movie, but everyone was so courteous and they used proper English. And I really enjoyed that, the connection with people. Yeah. And although somebody might be on the verge of dying or whatever, there was a lot of intelligent dialogue just prior to that. I really enjoy how people spoke with each other there.
Yeah, just because you're going to cap a motherfucker doesn't mean you need to be rude.
Right.
I feel like that's a lesson a lot of people could learn these days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Be polite before you cap somebody. Come on.
Yeah, it's just a polite conversation. You just don't hear it. You know, everything's abbreviated. Everything's texted. And that was like, I mean, again, it was like a total contrast to what the movie, what was action-wise happening in the movie. And I think that's what made it so impressive and entertaining as well, the juxtaposition of like that calm, cool, just everyday conversation, but while they're just about ready to sever a head or accidentally shoot somebody in the back seat.
Yeah, they're so like blasé about going to assassinate somebody that they're just like bullshitting about fucking cheeseburgers in Amsterdam.
Hey, we didn't even talk about the miracle, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Missing the shots. That was funny. Like Samuel L. Jackson was getting mad enough at John Travolta. He's not going to put a cap in his ass. I want you to acknowledge that this is a miracle.
We need to get out of here.
Just the scene where they're standing next to each other and they just kind of look around and they're right? Oh, we didn't get shot. All right. Well, that was crazy.
I'm trying to figure out, like, there's three acts to a movie, and in that first act, there's a call to adventure, and I'm trying to figure out, just thinking about it now, where was the call to adventure in that movie?
I think, well, because everybody has, like, each act, I think, has a different one.
Right.
Like, each act is, like, its own little
the call to
movie,
adventure,
basically.
Right. Okay.
Like,
right.
The watch, for sure, is Bruce Willis's, you know.
The catalyst and wakes up.
Mm-hmm. The Bonnie situation has its own, and also the going on the date with Mia, that has its own thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's almost like a bunch of
like a series.
Short stories.
It's vignettes.
Yeah. Pulp Fiction, right?
That's, but they're all intertwined in such a way,
Well, and I like how it defines pulp in the beginning of the movie.
I feel like I forget about that definition being at the beginning every time.
Yeah.
I just, like, I was surprised this time, and I'm like, I've seen this movie so many times, why don't I vividly remember this definition coming up before everything starts?
Insane 70s graphics of Pulp Fiction kind of just, like, make you forget about all the mundane aspects when you're like, oh, man, that font is insane.
Yeah, I think there's way too much to talk about in this movie. You can't encapsulate it in like an hour.
No.
No, absolutely.
You could write
not.
Like a 100-page thesis of film on just this movie.
Yeah. This is like just how like effortless it seems too. Like everything is so, there's so many little details in absolutely every scene. Absolutely nothing is like kind of like taking a chance. It's almost like, it doesn't feel like a Kubrick movie, but when you really like look at every scene and pick it apart, it's kind of put together like one. Like even just when like Jules and Vince go to the bar, I think it's like it's right after Marcellus is talking to Bruce Willis. This was the first time I noticed that the bartender just immediately gives Jules a beer and gives Vince a cup of coffee. Like he knows what they want immediately.
The other guy wanted a cigarette, right?
Bruce Willis, he came for them red apple cigarettes.
I think that bartender guy was originally supposed to be Jules. Or no, it was supposed to be for Samuel Jackson, but he almost gave it to him because his audition was so good.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think it was him.
That would have been a different movie.
Yeah.
Way different.
Well, and it's funny how he continues to use the same actors a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And I wonder like how that family experience you were kind of talking about earlier plays into that, where if do they want to keep working with him, or is he so good to work with that, you know, it's just
I know
pull.
Uma Thurman's kind of done with him.
Well, yeah, that's a whole nother.
Because of the hashtag thing?
No, because in Kill Bill, like, he had a scene where she was driving, like, this old car, and, like, she wanted to get a stunt double to do it because the car was super dangerous, and he was like, no, just do it, like, real quick, it'll be all good, and he put her on this, like, road that was super dangerous, so she ended up crashing it, and she, like, fucked up her leg. Ooh. And he was just like, oh, geez, I'm sorry. After, it was one of those situations where she kept on telling us, like, I don't feel safe doing this.
Right.
And he was like, no, do it. Come on, we got it. This will be the perfect shot. And it's just that one shot where she's driving and, like, her hair is blowing at the camera. And it's like, it totally could have been a stunt double, no problem. But he wanted it to be her.
Wow. So that was, like, the cruel tutelage of Pi May come true.
Just more or less, yeah.
Well, I think we've talked a lot about Pulp Fiction. And I think it's about time we decide if it's one of the greatest movies ever. And
yes.
I want a quick yes or no vote. I'm going to go around the table. I'm going to start with Mark. Yes or no?
Yes.
Carter?
Yes.
I'll say yes. Matt?
Wait, yeah, what about me? I think so. Yeah.
I think this movie's great. I think I'm with Matt. Like, I think it's actually his best movie. It might not be my personal favorite, mm-hmm. but I think it is his best from beginning to end movie. Yeah.
And it's impressive because it's his sophomore attempt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, I don't know anybody that's made a second movie that's been as great as this.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking gnarly.
Well, they kept telling Kevin Smith, you know, he was making Mallrats after Clerks, and they're like, this is gonna be your Pulp Fiction. And it just didn't quite get it.
I'm impressed with the consistency. I haven't seen Hateful Eight. I'm definitely gonna check it out. But even Death Proof, you know, they weren't trying for anything other than making it schlocky and just, you know, B-rated, like you're at a drive-in kind of a thing. But I'm amazed at, you know, from all the way from Reservoir Dogs. I know you guys said maybe you did one more movie prior to that, but everything after that's been extremely consistent. Obviously, he's got a lot of rewards, a lot of accolades, probably a decent amount of change to spend as well. But just the consistency of his product, you know, and I like Michael Mann movies. Steven Soderbergh, there's others as well, but I can kind of compare those two together. They seem really action oriented. You know, there's not always tons of dialogue, that kind of thing. And I definitely like just the way they wrote the script. It was just that's probably my favorite aspect of the movie is just the script itself.
I'd say Wes Anderson is probably the only other director that consistently hits those marks. I mean, they're totally like different kinds of movies, but the care Miyazaki. And like the distillation. Well, yeah, Miyazaki is always fantastic, but he's not just one guy working on, you know.
I'd say it's more of just his singular vision than like this is. Well, no, they're pretty similar, I'd say.
Yeah.
Because Miyazaki writes the movie as well. Because this is written by
written and directed.
Tarantino. Yeah,
but yeah, I'd say as far as like live action directors go, like Wes Anderson would probably be the closest thing to where like that distilled, you know, vision is the same in every movie.
Yeah,
see, and I don't like Wes Anderson like a lot, especially like Isle of Dogs. I didn't really like Isle of Dogs.
That made me sad.
I do not look forward to the day, hopefully it never happens, where there's like a Quentin Tarantino movie where I'm just like,
supposedly, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is his last. So
I mean, that's what he said about Hateful Eight.
He's not going to make any more movies after that? Really?
Yeah, that's what he said about Hateful Eight. So, we'll see.
He might just be trying to get that Star Trek contract.
Yeah, you should check out Hateful Eight. Mark, it's on Netflix, and so is this. This is
Hateful Eight's on Netflix. Yeah. Oh, I'm there.
But yeah, I really don't think there's at least a current director who churns out stuff that's consistently good like this. That doesn't have any like even near misses.
He hasn't done that many movies though.
Yeah, and that's part of it. He's not like just like
he's done very, nine, right?
Yeah,
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
This newest one will be number 9.
Fairly successful 9. But yeah, I like his pedigree. Just enjoy movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, out of, I guess, what Consequences Dictate Your Course of Action, he's pretty broke. Wrote a great couple of scripts, sold them.
Yeah.
I like that pedigree. You know, he didn't go to USC film school and it wasn't groomed for success, mm-hmm. you know, the way, say, a John Singleton was. Made some great movies as well. But yeah, really, I can connect with a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies for sure.
All right. I got one more question for y'all. Matt, is this movie better than Paddington?
I'm actually going to I'm gonna go with yes on this one.
Carter.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. If that's your point of reference for like, you know, the movie, then I'd say my favorite movie of all time is A Bronx Tale. That'd be probably my favorite movie.
Right. So it's better than A Bronx Tale.
It's right in there with it. Both were amazing movies.
I meant to give you Paddington, but I forgot. I would say this is better than Paddington.
I can't imagine that I will have ever watched Paddington as many times as I've watched this.
No. I own both. I'd still probably put in Pulp Fiction before Paddington.
All right. I think that about does it for this episode of Building the Movie List. And we're out.
Thanks for letting me join in, gentlemen.
All right. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Later.
See ya.